The mysterious Madame Vestris is surely a metaphor for our time, especially for Arizona daylight time, and for that shadowy waking time around 6:10 in the morning on the Kelvin scale. Although the mysterious Madame purportedly left the mortal plane 141 years ago this weekend, she has recently been seen in second-hand stores throughout New Mexico and Chile. This, too, is a metaphor for our time. The mysterious Madame lived in total seclusion near Boston, but for 27 handmaidens and one manservant, an abundantly tattooed Polynesian named Babab. She and they lived in a rambling old stone and steel building which had once been the Babcock Lawston Foundry in London, which you may think is not so very near Boston, but which decidedly is when compared with the distance to the Babcock asteroid belt, which Babab often did. You had a comment?
I was just thinking about the fact that it was rambling. But I thought you might have something in mind for that, so I'll just
pause.
Babab's oddest tattoo, and one which he claimed was self-etched under the guidance of an intelligent paranormal entity with zippers, extended from his latissimus dorsi to his Adam's apple. It seemed to be a blueprint for an addition to a house, complete with a list of construction materials. With the Madame's encouragement, he procured and assembled the odd assortment of materials. When he was done, the former foundry front porch had a new deck made entirely out of zinc, which too was a metal floor for our time. The mysterious Madame had a face which could politely be described as unforgettable. Her limpid eyes reminded one of reflective pools of hot tar in which small ruminants became trapped, sometimes for centuries. They were dangerously deep brown in color, midway between a khaki and a Cleveland brown. Her nose could have been pressed from a waffle iron, the steady seepage from her nostrils serving to remind one of the gustatory pleasures of fresh maple syrup. Her mouth and gums. What do I want to say about her mouth and gums?
Mouth and gums, yes, please speak.
Her mouth and gums were descended from engaging in numerous oral badminton volleys when she was young, and the residual phosphorescence produced an eerie orange glow visible just before dawn.
A birdie orange glow.
Yeah.
An eerie, oh no, it's spelled the other way, like where birds nest, an eerie.
Erie, Pennsylvania?
Eerie as in badminton birdies.
Ah, right.
Right.
Her ears, often mistaken for cartilaginous potholders, could pick up the sound of ventriloquistic. It's happening now again. Her ears, often mistaken for cartilaginous potholders, could pick up the sound of ventriloquistic field mice at 300 yards. Her eyebrows never stopped growing and were quite long. Two handmaidens coiffed them daily into three-dimensional representations of Babab's tattoos. A prolific tinkerer, Madame Vestris invented the warehouse sale, the spot quiz, the paisley, many of the words which begin with the letter K in the revised standard Boston lexicon of 1840, a rudimentary forerunner of the tokamak, and le flambeau orange.
Le flambeau orange.
If she had not been born in 1797, she would have invented herself, although shortcomings in genetic engineering might have delayed her arrival for 199 years. But what does the appearance, disappearance, and potential resurrection of the mysterious Madam have to do with this, the 116th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar?
My question exactly!
This portion of which has been granted permission to use any K-word from the revised Standard Boston Lexicon of 1840, including, but not limited to, the moniker to which our lenient microphonist most favorably responds,
Kipper!
Kipper! What? Indeed, old Kipper.
It's the Kipper and Camion Q Cusick Kazar.
It very well could be.
And we're listening to the music of Shostakovich right now, who fortunately died. He wrote good tunes.
Yeah.
That's right. What am I saying?
This is a good tune.
Who died? That's not, wasn't fortunate at all in just a mere 22 years ago on this day. And what we're listening to is the last movement of the Fourth String Quartet, written the same year that I was de-embryonized.
Ooh.
So let's listen out some of that next 2.51 minutes. Music by our death day of the week boy, Dmitri Shostakovich.
Not to mention, who did I mention? Oh, the mysterious Madame Vestris.
Madame Vestris, the mysterious. Will we have a true story of Madame Vestris one of these days?
What makes you think this was anything but apocryphal?
Precisely. String Quartet number 4 by Shostakovich. That was the last movement, the Allegretto.
See, that didn't have to kill him. He could have written another 10 years' worth of those things.
I guess it was sort of nice. Had a nice lilting feel to it.
Well, of course, he didn't usurp Mr. Bela with those things, but
no.
He did some good things.
Today, our guest at 3 o'clock will be Henning Berg.
Who both discovered his son, Alban, and also the Motor News published in Brattleboro.
Yes, I believe you mentioned that.
Do I?
Yes.
how quickly one forgets. So in this case, it doesn't matter.
True enough. It doesn't matter. Henning Berg at 3 o'clock, and he devised Tango, which we thought at first was an acronym. It turns out not to be. An interactive computer program that is set up to work with the jazzish idiom, one might say. He'll tell us more about that in detail when we listen to some of it, but that gives the opening for today's interactive performance with electronics program.
I thought as much.
And let's jump right into the music and hear one of the earliest pieces, a piece from 1960, from July of 1960, by Karlheinz Stockhausen. This is called Kontakt.
Now,
Kontakta.
This is an old piece,
yes.
And yet it doesn't age. It's still dandy.
Well, I guess the first pieces of their kind sometimes just stick around as being imaginative and having all of those elements of excitement, and they just stay with them. And somehow these early Stockhausen pieces just do that.
Yeah.
This is from the about a third of the way into the piece. So we're going to pick it up after the development has already taken place a little bit. And here, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 minutes of this extraordinary 30-minute work called Kontakta by Karlheinz Stockhausen. Thank you. And with that, the section, the middle section of Contact by Karlheinz Stockhausen comes to a brief point of rest. A wonderful piece to hear in its entirety, still available, actually reissued by the Stockhausen Library in Germany. The entire electronic opus of Stockhausen has been re-released within the past 5 years.
On LP, curiously enough.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Did you read the report, speaking of LPs, that the sale of LPs dipped to an all-time low in 1994 of about 900,000, and now with a resurgence of a lot of DJs still wanting to use the LP techniques of mixing and blending and reversing direction and skipping and scratching, it's gone back up to 2.1 million.
Oh, good. I was hoping for that.
So the resurgence of the LP. So, in fact, you could be correct about that. They may have nice LP versions so we can continue to hear that nice ambiance in the back. That would be kind of an electronic and acoustic thing. We could play Beethoven and call it that if we wished, I suppose.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Some Canadians.
Let's listen to another bit of a composer by the name of Octavian Nemescu, in somewhat of the same style of Stockhausen, at least in that similar school. A piece from about 10 years ago called Meta Byzantinirikon. This is for saxophone and magnetic tape. Another somewhat interactive piece. I guess we can't call them interactive. They were somewhat interactive at the time because the player had to bounce off that, but the electronics actually don't respond, as they do in tango, which we'll get to a little bit later with our interview with Henning Berg. Here it is, a little bit of Meta Byzantinirikon by Octavian Nemescu.
Thank you.
Octavian Nemescu, a 20-minute work called Meta Byzantinirikon for magnetic tape and saxophone.
Would you consider his other piece with the anxious angster choir, clarinet choir?
Different guy.
But they...
They have cues at the end of their name.
Yes.
Different guy, though.
Still, but it's still...
I bought them at the same time. Does that count?
It does. And they're both interactive.
Yeah, I see. Let's move along here to a little bit of Anne LaBerge. She did a piece, and this really is interactive, actually. It's HMSL, which is the Hierarchical Musical Specification Language, HMSL piece for computer, driven by the sound of the flute. And so this is actually an early piece of hers on her CD called Blow, which the computer responds to what she plays with a sequence of notes and so forth. She explained it at one point at a workshop and said it was actually her first electronic piece. Here it is, a little bit of what? Sick Sauce, that's what it is. Sick Sauce, sick as in S-I-C, like in the editor's mark. Sick Sauce by Anne LaBerge. Excerpt from Sic Sas by Anne LaBerge.
I can hear what the computer is doing. I would probably do many of the same interactions.
When you heard those tunes?
Exactly.
I think, as she explained it, most of the tunes are actually stolen from other pieces, borrowed quotes.
Of course.
That's what it is.
Wonder if she had to get print rights the way others do.
I don't know. Good question. Anyway, that's available on her compact disc called Blow. Very good compact disc. Very interesting use of the flute. Let's turn right to the new compact disc by Henning Berg and John Taylor. Henning Berg, our guest today. And then we'll go right into the interview here on the Calvus and Damien New Music Bazaar on WGDR. And that G is an important letter in this particular interview. WGDR, not Cologne, but Plainfield.
Right, and it's a wonder how we remember to do that week in, week out.
Very weak.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Welcome to Calvos et Damien Anou. Nois sesquiaur fantisk, nois musicar von Auf dem Autobahn in Köln. Es ist nun halb sechs, oder?
Halb sieben.
Halb sieben, oh, yeah. Halb sechs, halb sieben, who's counting?
We're still in a different time zone.
Time zone is different here. Time zone.
And we have coffee and we have tea and
the donuts are a little lean here, but that's all right. We'll get them when we get back to the States, where they know about donuts.
Donuts.
Zoga.
I didn't even offer you something to eat.
Not necessary.
Think of that.
We just came from some lovely spirits.
That's right. It was wonderful. And our guest today is Henning Berg, who is
the owner of Henning's Motor News.
Oh, right.
Out of
Brattleboro, Vermont.
Brattleboro, Vermont. How very insightful.
Isn't it interesting how someone all the way over here in Cologne can be publishing an automobile newsletter in Vermont? That's rather astounding.
It is. But modern music is like that.
It's like that. Where were we? We were. Oh, yes.
Köln.
Henning Berg. Yes. Tell us about yourself. Tell us the kind of music that you do. I'm here sitting on the floor in this studio surrounded by speakers, and there's a drum kit, a piano, computer printer, two Ataris and a Macintosh, and a string of Yamaha equipment and a Roland device. And what else have we got up there? And Sonic.
Sonic the Hedgehog?
Sorry.
Your turn. Okay. Guess I'm on now. Okay. I'm a jazz musician here from, actually not from Cologne, but I've been living here for 20 years, and I play the trombone on a good day, and on the bad days as well, I play in the West German radio big band called the WDR Big Band.
The WDR Big Band. I never thought I would hear WDR and big band in one phrase.
We haven't, actually. One has been superimposed over the other.
Let's hear it again. Say that.
It's WDR Big Band.
I'm impressed.
Well, it's a very nice institution. We are doing jazz and jazz-related stuff exclusively, which is a nice thing for a big band, not to have to play any dancers and stuff like that. We are playing nice festivals with guest conductors, guest arrangers, guest soloists, and we've been playing the Montreux Festival several years, mm-hmm. Quincy Jones and people like that, this year again. We are even going to go on tour with, what's his name, Phil Collins.
Phil Collins.
In July sometime this year. And, yeah, so it's a very good band, and that's, well, I'll have to say that I'll leave the band next summer.
Okay.
After 14 years of playing there. And I do that because I want to do smaller projects on my own,
mm-hmm.
with small groups,
yeah.
more, and also with my electronic stuff. That became very important for me.
Let's hear about that, because that's what we first heard about, was the electronic stuff.
Well, years ago, I think it was in 88, there happened to be an international computer music conference here in Cologne, the ICMC, which is 1 year in the States, one year in Europe, basically that's kind of the deal. Was here in Cologne, and I used to program music before that in sequencers, with keyboards and stuff. I made my own with the tapes and so on.
How far back does that go? When did you start doing that sort of thing?
10 years ago,
uh-huh.
86,
okay.
Something like
yeah.
that. Yeah. So, having heard about this ICMC and not knowing anybody there, if you're serious about that kind of stuff, working with electronics and so on, you should at least go there and check out what's happening there and what are they doing. And one of the first persons I met on that particular Saturday morning was a man named Clarence Barlow.
Ah, yes, Clarence Barlow.
Who, mm-hmm. who was the musical director of that ICMC in 88. And, as it happened in the afternoon, he showed to interested people, he showed some of his work,
mm-hmm.
a program
mm-hmm.
named Autobusk. He even played with it, and it was the first time in my life that I saw somebody working with a computer that, in a way, that was not quite predictable, where something came out of the machine that wasn't actually put in the same way.
Now, Autobusk, for our listeners, is best described, I think, as a parametric music generator. You can either analyze or derive for yourself kind of a condition in which you want the music to play. And that can be harmonicity or rhythmicity or leafiness of notes. There are any number of parameters that you can specify so that you can produce music that may be similar to plain chant, that may be similar to Mozart, that may be similar to Stravinsky, or maybe totally original because of the parameters you've chosen. I think the description might be inadequate, but at least describe some of it.
Yeah.
Can you expand on it, maybe?
Well, what was most striking to me was the fact that the program, actually internal parameters of the program, can also be remote controlled by MIDI input.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I have to talk about MIDI now. No. So, There's somebody playing the piano or a MIDI keyboard or something like that, and the data that come in from playing a Beethoven piece or something actually control parameters of a program that generates music on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So this program suddenly makes completely different the use of a musical parameter, say volume or pitch or something like that, than actually the ear would do.
Mm-hmm.
A high note, a low note, a loud note, or a soft note. So that was the interesting part for me, that parameters actually were bent into something completely different. And I felt this is actually what I'm trying to do is getting something out of the machine that has to do with what was put in, but not in this predictable way of that you would do it when you use a sequencer. You know, you just program your tracks and you edit them and you copy stuff, and it's like the word processor for music.
Right, exactly.
And,
yes.
And this is a completely different thing. I talked to him later on, and I said I would love to have something like that. I'm a trombone player, and actually my idea is I want to be able to really improvise with it.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't there anything available on the market that you can buy? And he said, no, if you want to have something like that, you have to learn how to program yourself. I had no idea how to program a computer. I didn't know what a programming language was whatsoever. So he said, well, go to a shop and buy yourself a C compiler and just get started. Get yourself a good book and just get started. The problems will come on its own. You can always ask people and stuff. So actually, that was kind of the the first initial thing. The second thing was on the same ICMC, the opening concert was a concert by George Lewis.
Oh, yes.
The American fantastic trombone player and computer programmer.
Right, and we have just recently played a piece by Neil Rolnick that George Lewis performed, a spectacular piece called Wondrous Love, on a new CD that's only been out about a year.
Well, and he played up here in the up here in Cologne in the TV tower, TV tower, telephone tower, the big thing there, and he played all on its own with his trombone via a pitch to MIDI device and into a Macintosh where there was a program running. I think now his program is called Voyager. I don't know what it was called then. And this program was playing MIDI synthesizers, like an improvising duo partner. So that was that were actually the two things. Clarence, the talking to Clarence and seeing this performance of George Lewis. And then from then on, Clarence and I haven't talked for 3 years, and I just sat down and learned how to program and learned program exclusively to come up with something actually that I can play duo with, improvise duo music with. This program will never be finished because I'm working at it every day since then. But it's reached a state since, say, 1990 where I can actually perform with it. And
is this a program that you sell, or is this only for you?
Well, now it became I got a big software company, German software company, interested in this program. And we worked at it to make it available or more interesting for more people than only myself. So now it has a professional user interface and that kind of stuff as well that it didn't have in the first place. And it's sold all over the place. It's called Tango.
Tango is yours. Okay.
Yeah. And actually, I wished it was being sold all over the place, but it's available. That's
okay.
You said you wanted to work more with small ensembles, but have you written anything for the WGDR band, big band? Oh, that's our band.
No, there's no G.
There's only a G in ours.
But have you written any music for that big band?
No, I haven't. Not at all. No, I'm not really a person that sits down a lot and writes for ensembles and stuff. I'm more like a player, which also shows in my work with the computer. I concerts with Tango work like, well, I sit here and this computer rack is 2 meters or three or whatever away, and I play and the program plays and I listen and the program listens, and we hopefully come up with something decent. Thank you.
Has this changed the way you improvise? I don't mean simply mechanically, but the way you think about music?
Yes.
How's
yes,
that?
A lot. Funny enough, especially in the last couple of years, I work a lot more with pre-improvised music than I did before. Because working with tango basically is pre-improvised music most of the time. You can also enter changes, chord changes, which you improvise on and stuff. That is all possible, or meters, or give tempos, or have tango adapt to your tempo and stuff like that. But many times it's just free improvisation where you play and listen at the same time to get this loop straight between the two guys. And it has changed my way of thinking about these things. In terms, I'm more conscious about what do I expect from an improvising machine, or an improvising musician, or an improvising myself, in a particular moment. I realize that free improvisation never is completely free. Very often, or most of the time, you have to be very conscious of what are you actually doing right now. The situation can be that one of the two partners is kind of dominant and the other one provides background material for him. I suddenly start playing very soft in a duo improvisation. That can mean different things. It can mean, okay, let's start a big crescendo together.
All right, yeah.
It can also mean, I want to put you in the foreground now.
All right,
And playing background material for you. It can also mean, let's just enjoy playing very soft together. So how to find out what does the other one want now by playing very soft? And I also realize that this kind of things are also very important in writing tango, because many times when I'm writing the program, actually, I don't want it to be predictable on one hand. On the other hand, I want the musical output to be as good as possible, which sometimes is a contradiction in itself. Because just take this simple example of me playing soft. What do I want the program to do? Do I want it always to take it like, okay, I'm on now, it's my solo, or do I always want a big crescendo to come out of the situation? Okay, we go soft now and we go get louder. Tango actually has got a little mechanism in there that evaluates the situation that is happening right now.
In a live performance with live musicians, you sort of have body language and other cues. How do you exchange cues with your program?
As I said, I mean, it works. No, I didn't say that, but I will now. It works on different levels. One level is tango evaluates the situation that happens now. First of all, it memorizes what I'm playing. It analyzes my playing in terms of statistics, average pitches, highest pitches, lowest, longest notes, shortest notes, loudest notes, intervals.
Does it learn you, in a sense, at that time, or does it have a history of your previous playing?
No.
From that time? Yeah,
from
okay.
that time. This analysis actually controls a parameter that I call TSI, which stands for Time and Surprising Input.
That's good.
And this parameter is just a bar that goes on the computer's on the monitor that goes from left to right. On the very left, that means in the recent time there has been very little surprising input from me. Surprising input is input that is different from what happened before in terms of these values. And that means that basically it means very little surprising stuff in a certain amount of time means I'm bored. The program is bored. And on the other hand, lots of surprising stuff in a given amount of time means the program is attentive, rather. So if the program is bored, the program will have a tendency to play more spontaneous material, to play, to help me with new ideas, rather than follow me in what I'm doing, which the program is doing when it is very attentive. And so recent versions also contain an opinion that Tango doesn't have, not only about my plane, but also about his own plane. Basically works with the same parameters, but checks what am I, Tango, playing now? Is it time for a change, or isn't it? And these decisions, when is it time for a change in a given situation? Of course, these decisions eventually have been made by me, Henning, writing the program.
Right.
So that's the hard part, making it come to reasonable decisions without predefining too much. Because what is interesting to me about the whole thing is the surprising bit. Yeah.
I guess that's why I was asking you whether it kept any sort of history, because it would seem that what you would consider surprising and not, in some regards, would end up in your programming, so that if someone else were to work with it, it would kind of have your bias rather than that performer's bias.
Certainly. Well, even though there is many ways, parameters to shape the program to your own needs. I mean, you can really quite flexible predefine what do you think is a boring situation, and which parameters are more valid in terms of making it interesting and stuff. Like, for instance, a trombone player will put much stress on, bad word, we'll look at pitches as a very important factor, because the trombone has a pitch, in the normal jazzy kind of playing, has maybe a pitch range of say 1.5-2 octaves. That's basically where you spend 95% of your time, and most of it even narrower pitch range. So if I'm really at the very top of this range and move to the very to the bottom of this range, that's something that really makes a hell of a difference from a trombone player. Whereas if I'm playing the piano or a MIDI keyboard or something like that, 2 octaves is like what I'm doing all the time, and just using the left hand and the right hand will easily cover more than 2 octaves every second. So I will look at pitches in a completely different way then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same with intervals and stuff like that. Playing the 2 octave thing or octave intervals on the trombone will make it very obvious that this guy now wants to do something with big intervals, but octaves and stuff like that on the piano will not be such a big deal.
Is it called tango because you are, in a sense, dancing with the other instrument? Or does it stand for something like tief aufgeschlossen, Gesellenschaft, Obermeisterhart.
Obermeisterhart.
Am I close?
No, it's not an abbreviation for something. It's just I was looking for a word that has to do with music and that sounds a bit old-fashioned and can be pronounced in many languages, so it's Latin-based. And
hadn't already been used by someone else.
And has something erotic to it.
Yes.
Tango, yes.
It takes to the tango.
Can you envision a time when you will have two tangos where one improvises off of another so that you actually just sit in the audience and watch these two machines improvise off of one another?
I've never tried that. I've got my doubts if it would really be a very rewarding situation. I don't know, because I got a feeling that it's good to have at least one human partner in that loop of playing and listening.
And as many in the gate as possible come in to pay their respects and their ticket prices.
Add something to what you said about the two tangos. Actually, that's a situation that can be that we can get with only one tango, because when I mentioned this TSI parameter before, when this is very low to being bored and there is nothing coming in from the human partner, say, tango's got something like a feedback loop in there, where it puts its own output back into its input, and cell basically plays a solo, providing its own input by its output, you know, which is basically the same situation that you were talking about with two tangos playing with each other.
So it's the equivalent of a feedback loop if you have two. Is that what you're saying?
That's basically, it's very close to that.
Yeah. But have you tried it? Have you actually run two of them against each other?
No. Well, but I'm using this feedback thing. Tango is using its feedback thing all the time. But of course,
I wonder if, let's just run this with this a little bit. If you started it with human input, and then let the other one take over, so you ended up with the initial duet being you and the machine, and then let the other machine take over your part, since you've given it a germ to work with.
Well, you have to do that anyway. There has to be like a seed initially for it to start, because when you set tango up, it will just wait for your first note. So somebody has to do something then in order to get music out of it, right? But as I said, I mean, it's I never tried it with two machines actually sitting opposite to each other and just yeah.
There's something cagey about that, I think. Anyway, tell us about, you have a CD coming out.
I hope it's going to come out soon. That was the first time, the first time actually, that I tried to expand this tango situation, which originally was a duo situation from some human and the machine. Into a trio situation. An old friend of mine, the piano player John Taylor,
mm-hmm.
and I have done a radio broadcast in December 94 here in the WDR, live and all an hour with tango. He played a MIDI piano, and of course I play the trombone with a pitch-to-MIDI thing, and tango plays its keyboards. And these days tango is also able to sample what we are doing in real time stuff. So that was that, and now we thought we should do that again in an ideal situation, in a studio situation. So we have 3 days here in the radio. In a nice studio, and recorded music for a CD that will hopefully come out soon.
And perhaps by the time the show appears on the air, and you in fact are listening to the Calvos and Damian New Music Sesquihour on
WDR.
Not likely.
The DDR.
Not likely that either.
Right,
not anymore.
Who are we?
WGDR Plainfield. Thank you. Who is your audience? That's always an interesting question, particularly when we're talking to you here in Cologne. The audiences, the performers, the atmosphere with regard to contemporary forms of expression, all of those things seem to be very excited. And sometimes in America, maybe more often than not, there is not an audience or even a body of performers interested in groundbreaking ideas. How's it different here, or since you are here all the time, maybe you can't tell the differences, but what is your experience with audiences and performers here?
Basically, you described the American situation as it could have been a description of the situation as I look at it here. So I don't think it's that ideal that the audience is come to run the concerts, and I think it's as slow as you described it from over there.
But you can go to WDR here and work with them. We can't see many performers and contemporary composers going to our national public radio or even many of our local stations in the big cities and having much success.
Okay, that maybe is a difference. That stations like public radio stations and here in Germany still keep departments that don't necessarily serve the majority of people who like to have pop music and regular news and shows and stuff like that. So there is on each of these public radio stations, there is a department for contemporary new music and a jazz department, and people who take care of minorities who are interested in a certain different from the average taste kind of thing. And that obviously works only because public radio here is paid by a large amount of people who pay a monthly or quarterly something fee, and is not only paid for by advertising and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, that's maybe I was too pessimistic there. That's a big difference. But before you were mentioning concert situation.
That's yes.
And as soon as you leave this subsidized sector of public radio, with also its facilities of concerts and with a prestige involved, having a concert in the radio also pulls people into the radio hall,
mm-hmm.
and there are actually people listening to that, you know. But if as soon as you go to communities where they have society for music, for new music or something like that, you will find yourself sitting there with playing in front of five people or 10 or 15 if you're lucky, and basically, I think that's not too different from the situation you were just describing. So, a lot of this stuff here happens either in the radio situation, or, which is probably also the same in your world, or in a university situation, where people in the big music academies here have electronic music studios, nicely equipped, which is available in the States as well, isn't it?
Yeah, to the community, the university community, not to the outside world.
Yeah,
certainly not to independent composers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you have a teaching situation there that also involves creative work, and usually these studios are booked out mm-hmm. 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
People come in there to work at night and stuff. That's how it works here as well.
Let's get back to the music. Let's talk about your music again. You said something earlier about having to think more when you're working with tango, that it forces you to take more things into consideration. Does that conflict with what many people would call the intuitive nature of improvisation? Does that form some kind of, create some kind of conflict in you as you work? Or does it open new directions?
I don't see a conflict with intuitive playing, because I don't believe in playing that is entirely intuitive. There are always rules. I mean, you never drop every possible frame of what you are just doing. So you are playing with somebody in a room. You are playing with somebody over a certain amount of time in front of a certain group of people. You're playing certain instruments and stuff. There's always limitations. These limitations have to be taken care of also in a improvising situation with a machine. Say you want to play for a concert of 45 to 60 minutes, which is about the format when I'm playing alone with tango that I prefer to do. You can say, okay, I have to subdivide it somehow into, say, 8 segments of so and so many minutes, or 3 segments of 15 or whatever. And you have to think about what can I do to make it as little boring as possible,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as worthwhile as possible. So you will start arranging things. You will think about instrumentation. What kind of instruments is tango supposed to use? What are you going to do with mutes and textures and so on? The stuff I mentioned before, foreground, background, when are you on, when is the other one on? You will also, we also have our little cues, very, very definite stuff, tone combination, note combinations that enable me to switch on or off certain functions within the program. For instance, there is a very important switch. I mean, yeah, switch. Basically, it can be called a switch at the outside of the program that is called freeze, which does nothing but stopping tango from listening anymore.
Mm.
If I press this button, freeze, which this button is for me now just a combination of notes that I play on the trombone that will trigger this particular function, then tango will play exactly as it played before, and not change its playing as long as I defreeze the system again.
Mm-hmm.
So tango will move into some kind of pattern, that repetitive pattern that might be not exactly repeated, because the other parameters suggest not to repeat something exactly, but to stay in the same statistical range, say a few short notes and a long one,
mm-hmm.
something
mm-hmm.
like that, you know. And this function is very similar, it's very simple, but very useful in order to have tango produce background material very quickly. Because that's that's something I didn't think of before when I thought about foreground, background material. What can be background material? What can background material be? It can be soft, very, very quietly played, but it can also be louder. But then it has to have something like a pattern to it. It has to have something repetitive to it that you don't, that you, it has to have something where the listener doesn't expect something new all the time to be able to concentrate on something that happens with the other guy, from that comes from the other guy in that particular moment.
On the CD, is the tango respond in interacting with John Taylor also, or is it just?
Yes, John, in several ways. I play the trombone with a pitch to MIDI device with which tango listens to, and John plays MIDI piano, a normal grand piano with a MIDI interface that tango is able to listen to the same way. But there is another way for tango to listen to the two of us. We had kind of a feedback loop from the booth, from the recording booth, into tango that just fed the stuff that John and I played acoustically back into tango. And now in the more recent versions, tango is able to sample sound, not only listen to MIDI data, but also sample the real sound that is produced right now. And tango then copies those samples into a big chunk of memory somewhere and looks at them, analyzes them in terms of how long are they, how loud are they. It can chop them up in very small segments, put them together in different order, play them forward, backward, at the same time, and it also does that a lot. And also send them through pitch shifting effect units and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So in these two pieces, actually it's the first and the last piece on the tape, tango doesn't listen to MIDI stuff at all, but listens only to the real sound, records that real sound and plays it back completely different. as it was being played in real time.
You personify tango. Is tango a combination of a clone of yours and a slave to you? What is, you give it a real personality.
Well, it's somebody I
And does it vacuum? Does it pick up after itself? Can it cook?
Not as good as my wife, but I spent almost as much time with it. So, so
a tango à toi.
Well, there's some things I prefer to do with my wife, but anyway, it's kind of, well, it has kind of a personality to it, and it changes all the time, and at least it's an eternal construction site that you think of when you wake up in the morning, and many times during the day. So, yeah, in German it would even be more obvious that I think of it kind of like a person, because in German I always use er for tango instead of it, the program.
My God, it's begun to iron his shirt.
Yes, you can see it happening right now.
Sometimes it gets burned.
Is tango your pioneering act, or is the music that you play with tango your pioneering act?
That's a very good question. The reason I have tango is because I want to play music with it. And writing tango, you run into technical problems all the time that you want to solve, and that are sometimes frustrating and sometimes a lot of fun to solve. Writing tango is something different from writing, say, a word processor or a statistics program or something, because it's a long process of growth. Sometimes you sit there for 2 days and you wrote 3 lines of code, and then you spend hours and hours testing it, because, as I said, you don't want it to be predictable in terms of when I do this, it will do that. I want it to be to work properly on a higher level. So it's very time-consuming making this thing grow and get better and learn in a way. And on the other hand, it's very time-consuming to get music out with it, to perform, to play. And many times I realize that those technical problems kind of keep me from really go on stage with it, work with it, play with it, and think of musical output to be produced with it, which is the main purpose, the only purpose I have this for. So actually, this hopefully soon coming out CD will be one of the first attempts to get something straight that is only music,
mm-hmm.
and not a fascinating live performance
of
somebody playing with a machine.
Aha. That's very good. I understand. I understand what you're getting at. And that's, I imagine that having spent, 10 years now with that, it may be perhaps a hard divorce, should you have to separate yourself from the program, should it ever get concluded?
No, why? Okay. No. I have thousands of ideas that will certainly cover the next 20 years in terms of things to work at, and I'm very grateful for that, because I mean that would be the worst thing if I ran out of ideas what to do with it. There's so much missing that I can really describe very very definite that I want from the program and that doesn't work yet. That just needs time and effort and growth. And it's I compare it to a building. You have a building somewhere and you live in it, and eventually you find out you need a garage sometimes you even have to do work at the foundations of the building because you realize there's something wrong with it. And there will hopefully always be stuff that I want from the machine. But what I don't want to lose is the reason is to go on stage and play, or to come up with music on a tape and play this music to people without saying, look, this is what I did with the machine. The main point is, and I realize that this is possible now, also after these recordings, that the stuff John and I came up with, for instance, but also a lot of the stuff I came up with before on recordings that from live performances, that this stuff can only be produced this way. It would be impossible, virtually impossible, to come up with this kind of music in any other way.
So there is no clone or slave. This really is something that begins to have its own personality. It begins to have its own way of improvising with you, since it couldn't be produced any other, because you couldn't have another human there that would work the same way.
That was never the idea of the whole thing. To just imitate an improvising human musician. Because I'm tonight I'm going to be improvising with a fantastic piano player here from Cologne, and he gives me things that tango will never be able to give me, and the other way around. Mm-hmm. It was like that from the very beginning. It's not just that tango is more patient or it's a different quality of music.
Henning Berg, thank you so much for joining us today on the Kelvis and Damian New Music Sesquire. It's been a great pleasure, and maybe we will be back in the fall and get a chance to hear how tango has developed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Thank you.
The last cut from the new compact disc from Henning Berg and John Taylor with Tango on the keyboards. That's called Tango and Company.
Yes,
Tango gets first, top billing.
That's right.
Yes.
He's not anthropomorphizing that invention, not he.
Not at all. He was fun.
Yeah.
Had a good time there with Henning Berg, the Motor News guy.
And the father of Alvin.
Let's continue with the
anthropomorphizing?
Yes, the anthropomorphizing. This is more interactive electronics. This is music by Nicholas Collins to Babbo Fonio for trombone-propelled electronics. That just has a nice sound.
I can see these little beanies with trombones on them.
Yes, that's exactly the image, the little beanies. All right, well, here's the ending of that last 4.5 minutes of to Babbo Fonio. to Babbo Funio, music by Nick Collins. What did you say that was?
It was a tad annoying, but delightfully annoying in some respects.
Delightfully, indeed. One more piece for our exploration of interactive electronics and composition, one we heard a few weeks ago. Let's hear it again. This is Daniel Weymouth's piece for bass clarinet and interactive electronics called Rare Events. Thank you. concluding the electroacoustic interactive element segment of the Calvos and Damian New Music Bazaar. That was Rare Events by Daniel Weymouth and Michael Lowenstern, the fanabulous, fantasticifier player of the bass clarinet.
You don't think that would have made a nice mix? There were lots of little snippets of pieces that would have mixed nicely there together.
But you mean from one compact disc at the same time?
Exactly.
We'll have to see if we can snip it apart next time and make a little piece. Speaking of snippets.
Oh, why? Speaking of snippets, yes, yes. It is, in fact, time for Best of the
Bazaar. Best of the Bazaar.
Mark 23. Presenting listenable snippets from episodes 111 through 115 in an easily listenable format.
Pabulum.
Pabulum. Yeah, it is pabulum. Listenable snippets. Homogenized.
Just put in the old blender and just put a little, one of those little tiny short jars.
With the lid off, with
yeah,
the top off.
The name Gerber on it.
And this, here is the Gerberfication of episodes 115 through 111. No.
I hope they will.
Strange. Something. You may ask.
Swooping down to snap up bunnies.
It finally crashed at about 7:30 Sunday morning. I can't abide MIDI presets.
Eagerly, the Eskimos opened it and withdrew the Tupperware equivalent of a tokamak. Thank you.
Patience, gentle listeners. Patience.
From disco to country western? Four white... But anyway, I will just leave it at that. Well, I think it's Ligeti.
The Hermit Louse.
The problem of harmony. Problems of harmony. Chopin sounds wonderful. But I don't want it to be too easy. But I don't want it to be too easy. But I don't want it to be too easy. But I don't want it to be too easy. But I don't want it to be too easy. But I don't want it to be too easy. But I don't want it to be too easy. But I don't want it to be too easy.
A production of Multimedia.